shooting out sparks over 38 states, the Canadian plains, and the tequila fields of Mexico.
A program most deserving of a grand introduction.
The Nocturnal Journal.
The Talk of the Town. WGN Radio 720.
With your guide, Dave Hoekstra.
Daytime turns me off and I don't mean maybe. 9 to 5 ain't taking me where I'm
back. Welcome to the Nocturnal Journal here on Saturday night from the Allstate Showcase Studio. Back in the saddle, Dan Long. Last Saturday night, I was at the Ocean Lakes Campground in Myrtle Beach. 30,000 people there camping and living there. There's some rentals and stuff. It was really something.
30,000. Where do they put 30,000 people?
It's like on 300 acres. It's going to be for my next book. It was just like it really was. I don't know if I call it camping, but like every night they have a. Every weekend night, they all get around on golf carts. So they have this big golf cart parade where they all decorate their golf carts, like a Mardi Gras parade and stuff. It was really something. And now here I am with you.
Welcome
and
back.
And our listeners. So our first guest is Tori Muhammad. And he's the creator of Bean Soup Times, Inc., a digital media and marketing company that produces several online platforms that inform and empower the Black community. We're going to talk about that in a minute, but we brought Tori in to talk about the new website that just launched a couple of weeks ago called Black Chicago Eats.
Yes.
So thanks so much for coming in.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dave. It's a pleasure. We wanted to keep Mardi Gras growing for you, at least from the food aspect.
So thanks for bringing all this food in. Yes. I can already tell you, you'll be able to come back.
Who was that? Look over here. Look at
that's David Jennings.
Looking at the food it is delicious.
Our news guy. So So tell us about Black Chicago Eats. I mean, last I looked, 125 restaurants targeted for African Americans, but I think the number is higher than that.
Yes,
right now,
absolutely, it's growing by leaps and bounds. We actually have discovered roughly around 200 Black-owned restaurants and eateries, bakeries, dessert bars in the Chicagoland area and the surrounding suburbs.
And does a website like this exist? What gave you the idea to start this?
Right. Well, of course. No, it didn't exist. Yeah. That's why we did it. Because we needed it it was not there.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Uh-huh. You know, there was a list out of New York. Another website did a list of Black-owned restaurants and eateries. And people in Chicago found out about it and challenged me. Matter of fact, two people in particular, Anton Seals Jr. and Philip Thomas, both hit me up and said, we need one for Chicago. I did a list and found out it was over 100 Black-owned restaurants and eateries. And it sparked such an interest and a curiosity because people didn't know there were so many. And I saw the hole in marketing and promotion of those restaurants. And I also saw a need to be able to bring them together where people could come to that one source and find, a huge assortment. And so, you know, we're discovering so many things. Of course, traditionally, you know, a lot about soul food restaurants. And those are an important part of our community. But then you have people doing Italian, Mexican. I brought in tacos today. You have vegan restaurants. You know, it's just an incredible variety of things that are Black-owned in the city of Chicago.
And how do you find these? Do you do it yourself? Do you have a staff? How's this website put together?
It was primarily, I started going through my list of people that I already knew, restaurants I was familiar with, and then I started calling people that I know that, you know, like to frequent in Chicago foodies, if you will. And from there, I got that list of roughly 100. It actually literally was, when I first put it up, it was 95. And when I posted 95, people started hitting me up saying, you left out my auntie's restaurant name. What about this one? And how could you leave off this one up north? It's been around for 50 years, you know. So then I started getting a lot of feedback, and it started growing. And, of course, you have new restaurants that have come up and some that are not around anymore as well.
Before, we'll do this a couple times, but what's the website? How can people find it?
It is Black Chicago Eats, EATS.
And it's brand new. August 12th, did you launch?
August 12th was the official launch. We were in beta for a couple of months, and we officially launched with a two-week celebration encouraging people to go out and explore the restaurants. We call Black Chicago Eats Week.
And where'd you grow up?
I grew up in South Shore.
You did grow up in South Shore?
Yes.
Tell me what your life was like growing up there, what your family did, your early food memories.
Man, that's incredible that you bring it up. So I grew up, my mother was a school teacher, and I grew up right on 78th and Exchange. And so the lakefront and the beach were a big part of my upbringing. And this is so ironic. One of the things that I recall as a youngster is when all of my friends would get on our bikes and we would ride all the way up Lakeshore Drive to Evanston.
You would?
Yeah, we would. Wow. And, you know, I can remember just eating a hot dog. It was like, it's just a random thing, but it was like that was the victory after that long ride to Evanston.
And did you ride? Then you had to ride back.
Then you had to ride back.
Didn't take the L or anything.
Right. No. On polo bikes, yeah. As a matter of fact, when even 10 speed.
And how old are you?
Now I'm 46.
46. So yes. What about food memories? What were the restaurants you went to? Just around the city, all over, south side, north side, west side?
You know, it's very ironic. Growing up, I don't recall going to a lot of restaurants outside of some of the fast food restaurants. And maybe, you know, I can recall like going to Reggio's, pizza. They had a little pizza place. I can remember Lim's, getting barbecue fries from Lim's, and Harold's. You know, those are the main ones. I don't recall, you know what? Because you asked me something I wasn't thinking about, right? So the more I think about it. So those are the fast food places that I went. I can remember those mostly as, like in high school. But then I also recall on Sunday mornings when I was a child, my grandmother would take me to Gladys's over in Bronzeville. Yeah. And that would be where we stopped before we went to her church, which was Bethel AME Church. So that's probably one of the biggest sit-down restaurant memories I have of going to Gladys's with my grandmother.
Did you have favorite dishes, when you think about it, favorite meals that resonated with you as you look back? Even something at Gladys's?
I can't recall. I know I liked, always liked meat. So.
Yeah. Yeah. What'd you bring in now? What'd you bring in? Tell us where all this is from.
It's almost
all you went all 9 yards here for those of us watching on the internet.
Yes. So we do have, one thing we have is Mad Tacos. Now, we had 4 tacos when we started off. You see how good they are. They're going very quickly.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, you, Dave, that's eating the one that's fried. Absolutely delicious tacos from Mad Tacos, which is on 306 East 75th Street. And then we have here, for those who can see it, this is Dan's soul food. Now, Dan brought three things. So we have Dan's, he has some fish here. We have, which is not where people can't see it if they're looking, but we have some turkey and some beef as well. And we have here, now Dan is located 2500 block West 79th Street in the Ashburn neighborhood. Then you have Brown Sugar Bakery. We came back now to the Chatham Grand Crossing area. They're 328 East 75th Street, and this is some of their signature mini cupcakes. They will be opening up very soon in Navy Pier as well.
Oh, they are?
Yes,
Is that a scoop for us here?
Yes. Yeah. I think maybe. I don't know. It's been on the internet.
It has been on the internet.
It's been on Facebook. But
what's in those cupcakes?
So we have, it's yellow cake, and we have some that are topped with chocolate, some that are topped with caramel, and then we have a white frosting with a little chocolate drizzle. And the caramel cake is their signature one. It's the favorite one. It's the one that people will break in at night and steal and go on the corner and sell. So good, caramel cakes. True story. And then I also brought, a good friend of mine has some incredible bean pies, Imani's original bean pie. So I wanted to bring a little taste of her as well here.
That's very, thank you. Thanks a lot. How have, as you've been doing this, and just even before you started the website, how have appetites and the palate changed? You know, I did the book on soul food.
I was showing you. Yes, yes. I can't wait to read it.
And people's definition of soul food, I mean, and we end the book with vegan soul food. About soul veg on the South Side. And they actually mentored some people in Detroit that are doing a wonderful job using tofu as a catfish substitute and stuff. But how have people become more health conscious, and how has that changed the, quote, soul food and things like that?
You know, this is a big controversy, and it's a ongoing conversation, I think, of course, with defining what is soul food, right? So there's something more than just the food that has to be part of the conversation, right? soul food, the soul aspect of it is that family. It's sitting down at a table, really eating together. It's the conversation and the communal aspect of whether it's as part of preparing the food and also, of course, eating the food. So that aspect of soul food, it transcends whatever the quote unquote type of food that is being ate, right? And then you also have some of the traditional foods, some that, you know, were part of our diet when we were brought over to America and then had to discover a new way to eat. And it became staple. Some of it was things that we saw that were from the earth that had nutrients and vegetables, of course, the greens and things like that, that we began to consume. But then also it is an aspect of the when it comes to, well, let me say it like this, when it comes to the health aspect, right, there are a lot of people who really don't want to classify soul food as unhealthy. It's just, okay, if you look at some of the big portions and the big aspect of soul food, it is the vegetables. So they really talk about, okay, well, if you got your peas, you got your corn, you got your this, this is a lot of the vegetables that you need in the nutrients. And if you slow off on some of the meat, you know, you can still have a healthy diet and eat quote unquote soul food.
We're going to take a break here for some spots and we're going to come back. Yeah, I want to talk to you also about the definition of just what soul is
yes.
when we come back here on WGN.
Sugar, honey, honey, you are my candy.
Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal. We're talking with Tori Muhammad about the new website, Black Chicago Eats. With restaurants targeted for African Americans, more than soul food. We're kind of talking about soul food, but it's all kinds of food.
That's right.
Okay. How do you define? How do you define? I'm interested in soul food, and for a white guy. And years ago, for the Sun Times, is in the foreword of my book. Helen mm-hmm. Maybell told me, mm-hmm. you know, we went down there, and she asked 10 different people about soul, and you get 10 different answers. Mm-hmm. Soul is whatever rings your bell, but soul definitely exists within the body. It's in the mind of the observer, whether or not you can relate to that other being. It's like plugging a cord into a wall. When I did this book, I mean, a lot of stuff I heard, common answers were soul is love and soul is a bond. And that's why I think understanding about people gathering at a table, whether it's in a restaurant or at a home, is important for our conversation mm-hmm. here in Chicago. So
that's right.
What is soul?
That's right. That's absolutely. And that's, I think, what I was kind of alluding to earlier. Soul is... You know, you hear people talk about putting love in the food. It's that ingredient that you can't touch, you can't feel, but, well, I'm sorry, you can touch it, but you can't touch it, but you can feel it, right? It's that energy. It's that love. It's that when you eat something, you know that the person who prepared it had love in their heart for the people that they knew were going to eat it. And that's what helps to create that love in the family, in the atmosphere, in the dialogue even. You know, that's why we talk about, man, let's break bread together. You know, it's biblical. It's scripture that talks about with breaking bread and having brotherhood and sisterhood.
Yeah, yeah. What's resonated so far on the website? I spent some time on your website and answering your question for you there. I mean, 12 classic black-owned restaurants, every true black Chicagoan knows.
Yes.
That's you've gotten a lot of feedback on that.
I did.
Of these I know, some of these I don't. Why don't we go over some of these? Harold's Chicken Shack, everybody knows that.
Everybody knows Harold's.
Uncle Remus. So tell me how you picked 12 and, you know, how they, Lem's Barbecue, I've been there.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these I haven't been to, but how'd you come up with these 12?
Well, I just kind of thought back throughout the years on those places that, when you say the name, people know about it. People know what it is. And of course, you know, as I talked about in an article, some of it's West Side, South Side. So I had to be neutral and put in Harold's and Uncle Remus. You know, West Side is, we get offended. If you're on the West Side, you say, where's the Harold's? They say Harold's. So, you know, these are the places that, you know, you grew up with, that people, everyone knows about.
Dusty's Southern Style Buffet, located in... Dan Long, have you been to Dusty's?
I haven't, no.
Dusty's Southern Style Buffet, located in Matteson.
Yes.
I've never been there. It used to be a Red Lobster.
It used to be a Red Lobster, and they actually have two now. And that actually is owned by... Somebody just walked in here and talked about Kenny's.
Yeah.
So they're owned by the same person. So a lot of soul food there. People love it. It's a mainstay in the community.
Now, do you go in and check these out, or do you write from memory? Or
I wrote from memory for most of them. I haven't been to all of them recently, Okay. Yes, but from memory and from quick reference of people who, you know, still are familiar with those places.
And what have people say you missed? I mean, what's been the response on stuff you should have had on the list of the 12?
I think one was Priscilla's, you know.
Oh, I know that. Yeah.
Yes, Priscilla's was definitely one that people said should have been on.
Where's
there.
Where's that? That's in...
They have two in the south suburb. One's in south suburbs. I think one is a little bit west.
Yeah, one's like up by Riverside or Berwyn or something.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. So that's one I have to visit because I've never been to Priscilla's. People mentioned Three Chefs, and I hear I had some of their food, so they have some good food there as well. They, you know, they're a little newer, you know, so I don't know if they would be one of those classic ones. And that's what I had to kind of highlight to people. We're talking classic / iconic. So that means they have some staying power. They've been around for a while.
Now, Pearl's Place.
Yes.
I would have, that came up.
You know, there's some controversy. I don't know if we want to talk about. I don't want to talk about Pearl's Place.
We're all about controversy.
So I think there is a part ownership of Pearl's Place. They were sold. And the new owners are not black.
Oh, really?
I think there might be 25%. I think it may be four or five people, maybe one of them. And so my definition for a black owned was that it has to be 51% owned by a black person.
That's interesting. We were going to include them in the book, and we kind of ran out of space. We went there a couple times. There's a bunch of regulars. When was it sold? I didn't know.
Maybe the last 2-3 years.
Last 2 or 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. We were talking about that in the green room, and again, I encountered this in the book. How important, and this is kind of what your background is, how important is marketing and getting the word out and stuff? In the book, I mean, I was telling you, the ones that really resonate and are well-known and they have great marketing plans are like Sylvia's in Harlem.
Yes.
Sweetie Pie's in St. Louis.
Yes.
You know, the mom and pops, even when I was trying to put together the book and setting up interviews and setting up fact-checking, you know, when the marketing's weak, it was hard to work.
Right. You know, it's a wonderful thing, and it's also an incredible challenge, right? You have people who are not business savvy, a lot of them. They love to cook. They love to feed people. They love that idea of owning something that can give that kind of energy out to the community. But they don't have business background. So they get into it, and sometimes they can be successful for a little while. But without a strong marketing plan, without a focus on making sure that people keep coming in the door and not just rely on word of mouth, it is very hard to survive in a very competitive market, and especially in Chicago. And restaurant business in general is a very hard business to be in. So the open and close rate is very quick on restaurants. So if they don't focus and look at marketing and advertising, and the opportunities now are so much greater than they were 20 years ago. You know, you almost had to have a huge budget to reach people, but today you don't. So I hope and I encourage a lot of them to take advantage of the new technology and to start really promoting themselves more. This is why this is another reason why it was so important to me to put this together, to help give a push to these restaurants. Some of them, I don't know the owners. I haven't, you know, there are many I do know, but I haven't walked in every one of these places yet and don't know them personally, but I know that they're doing something that is centered around what's important in our community, eating, and it's also centered around job creation. And so I want them to survive because they provide an outlet for that young guy or young girl, whether they're doing great in school or they're trouble in school, whether they're getting in trouble in the streets or they're at home as in a great child. Regardless, if they don't see opportunities for them to get into a field that they may love, which is cooking, then we may lose out on an incredible next chef because they didn't see the opportunity. So one may end up, you know, doing clerical work somewhere, bored out of their mind. Other one may be in jail. Mm-hmm. But either way, they didn't have the opportunity if we don't have enough of them in the community.
Your website, does it give, and off the top of your head, I mean, for young entrepreneurs trying to get into this, what resource material is there? I mean, Mariano's invites local black business owners to showcase their products.
Yes, absolutely.
That. But how can people find help for this?
Well, that's what I want to help to be a stronger source of information. So, you know, next year or the next time it comes out, I want to be able to let people know beforehand that Mariano's is having these kind of open door opportunities. I want to be able to connect the restaurants that see the opportunity with, you know, maybe some premier buying opportunities where, you know, when you have a diner's card and, you know, they should be opportunities for them should be in some of those diner cards. You know, it's all kind of resources I want to be able to help provide for them. And I'm even looking at some kind of incredible turnkey marketing packages that we can really, you know, help them get the boost they need. And we can help them get people in the door, but the food and the service is what's going to keep people coming back.
This is fascinating stuff. You got a lot of fans out there at the Allstate Showcase Studio. And you want to hang on a little bit longer,
man,
after the news?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, I want to talk about how you got into all this. So don't go away after David Jennings in the news on WGN.
Somebody's digging my potatoes, driving on my farm. I had a deja feeling, resting on my mind. I tipped up to my window.
Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN. It's like the midnight special with Lead Belly there playing some Lead Belly. We're here with Tory Muhammad, creator of Bean Soup Times, Inc., and also the creator of the website Black Chicago Eats. So we've been talking about Black Chicago Eats. Give us the website again.
BlackChicagoEats.com.
Okay, but tell us about Bean Soup Times and how that informed what you're doing now.
Yes, absolutely.
You're talking about marketing and all that.
Absolutely.
You know what you're doing.
I'm not new to this.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, Bean Soup Times, I have been doing that website for really about 15 years now. It started out as actually a print newspaper, and it's going through several metamorphoses. And today we cover business, politics, arts, and advocacy. And so along the way, of course, we did a lot of foods related stuff, reviews, features on new restaurants. And as I began to look back, those were some of the most engaging news items that we posted. So, you know, Bean Soup Times is a blog. It's a website, but then it's also a marketing company. We do media and marketing. So we help businesses get the word out about their product or service. And in that regard, I began to see the incredible need for businesses on the South Side and the West Side that were owned by black people to get a bigger push, right? To work harder. It's something that it's not across the board, but a lot think about marketing after the fact. Matter of fact, you know, even if I look at some of the companies that I work for, organizations, and when you look at business in general, marketing is often, you know, secondary. And the ones that are successful long term are those that put marketing often first, right? McDonald's still advertises.
Yeah.
Coca-Cola still advertises. as much of the market share they have, they understand the importance of staying in front of the consumer.
When did you start Bean Soup Times?
2001.
2000. Where'd the name come from?
Yeah. So there was, I, you know, as you look back, I see food was always close by.
Going back to Gladys.
In my thought process. So I wanted something that reflected food, but it also reflected the idea of coming together to break bread. And at the time, Bean Soup Times was launched as a satire and entertainment publication. So I was the black answer to The Onion, basically. So I wanted something that reflected that when you heard it, it was humor, but it was news. Right. So but it fit because I liked that the way people responded to it was something that was also important to me. That every culture has some connection with bean soup, whether, you know, it could be fried beans, or Latino, It could be lentil beans and Indian, you know, cultures. But everyone was familiar, and it was often, you know, that staple food that you had, even when nothing else was around to eat. You could have some soup, whether chicken noodle soup, whatever it was. So I just thought that that would be a good reflection for this name, that I wanted to be universal. And for people that that know the Muslim community, you know, we had a bean pie, and bean soup is a big part of the culture because it is a simple something that you can prepare that has a bunch of nutrients in it that can fill you up, but it's not expensive.
And moving in the time we have left, moving backward in the arc of your career, tell us about the Final Call newspaper. And you wrote for the Final Call?
Yes.
Tell us what the Final Call is.
Absolutely. So I actually still contribute to the Final Call newspaper. So that is the publication published by Minister Louis Farrakhan, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And it is an incredible source of news and information that kind of connects the Black community, oppressed people, poor people across the country with news and information that's relevant and related to that community. So I contribute as much as I can even to this day to that publication. It really gave me the foundation of journalism that I have today.
How'd you get involved with the Final Call?
I came straight out of college and begged for a job.
Really? And tell us, I mean, some of the stories you've done. I mean, tell us about the Death Row 10.
Yes, that was that was one of those really life-changing events. You know, when I first started working there, we often got letters from people in prison talking about their cases and saying they were innocent. And while you don't want to judge anybody, you know, the running joke is, hey, everybody in prison is innocent, right? So as a journalist, it was overwhelming to look at all this information and think, well, I can't do anything about it. But I began to get in touch with a few lawyers that were working on some of those Death Row 10. And when I began to see the connections between them and the similarities in the stories and the identification often of John Burge or that department he was in, that he was over as commander, then I, you know, wanted to do something about those group, that Death Row 10. And I didn't realize it at the time because no other mainstream media had really written about them, yet. So, but I didn't even think in that terms, but it was after the stories came out, maybe about a year later, that one of the mothers of the Death Row 10 said, you know, you were the first one to write something about our cases. And that was, I didn't even know that.
Wow.
Yes. Wow. And yeah, so that's a tragic situation. Of course, we know how much has come out since then about convictions being overturned.
Good for you.
Yes.
So where's this? Where's the website going to go? I mean, what's your future for it? What are your plans? You're doing this all by yourself? Are you going to get like little foodies to write stuff?
And I'm reaching out. Foodies of the world, let's unite.
Yeah.
So yes, I've got a few people that are going to come on board to write some reviews, and we're going to start doing some video. We want to show up at different restaurants and kind of feature them, give people a view of the restaurants, the neighborhoods, and we want to do some real, I don't want to say a TV show yet, but I want to do something that maybe it's a documentary, something that can tell the story. I think one of the things that is often missing in a lot of the restaurants is we don't know their story, you know, and when you know the story, it helps you to endear yourself to the place. And that's what you do with that book. You tell the stories of the people.
Yeah.
You know, I know people who there's one guy that owns Turkey Chop. He has fed over 75,000 needy people. Every Monday he opened. It used to be he was closed on Mondays, but now every Monday for 3 hours, he feeds people who don't have enough money to pay for a meal.
See, that's right in my wheelhouse. Where's that at?
It's on 3506 West Chicago Avenue.
It's not far from my house.
Humble Park.
Yes.
Turkey Chop.
Chop
Gourmet Grill.
You want to come back sometime?
Man, I would love to come back. I may not bring as much food, but I'll bring some food.
Bring some more food. get some drinks. Get some
leftovers.
Some cold beverages. They all want the food out there.
Right.
So thank you. Give us a shout out for the website one more time, Mr. Tory Muhammad. Give us the website.
The website is blackchicagoeats.com.
Is there a website for Bean Soup Times?
Beansoup Times.com.
All right, you're on top of it. Okay, thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you, Dave.
We're going to be back and we're going to talk about more food topics after this break on WGN.